All right. Well, she probably needs no introduction, but I'm going to introduce her anyway. She's like a sister to me. It gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker from Orchid, who saved my ass more than once, Cindy.
Thank you, Glenn. I'm Cindy, and I am a happy, grateful alcoholic. I want to tell you that I get in service. I like to 12-step. I like to talk to one drunk, talking to another, letting them know how it works. I like to sponsor. I go to any length through my recovery. But, you know, it wasn't always like that for me. You know, when I have two older brothers and a young brother. And my family was, we yelled a lot, you know. My dad yelled a lot, and nothing we ever did was good enough. You know, my brothers got it the worst. He never encouraged, he never uplifted. You know, the tools that I learned when he drank was yelling at my mom, belittling us, and I remember crying in the room, and I'd go to the bed with my brothers and, you know, be crying and telling my older brother, do something, you know, we don't like him, do something, you know, because he's hurting mom. But that didn't happen, and I don't know at what age, but I know I was little and I took a sip of beer, because my uncles would be sitting around during, you know, birthday parties, funerals, whatever. My grandfather, and they'd always say, go get me a beer. You know, go get me a beer. So I would open it and like that, and then I'd sip it. And then I'd go to a different uncle or my grandfather, and they'd let me have a drink, and I liked it. You know, I liked it. I not only liked the effect, but I liked beer. I really did. And that's where it started for me. And I remember growing up too, we couldn't have friends over. You know, they'd see my dad's truck pulling around the corner, all the kids would split. They'd ring. And if they were there, my dad would tell them, get the hell out of here. You know, you guys go home. We couldn't have friends. I remember growing up, I couldn't even go to dances. He wouldn't let me go. He says, okay, go wash dishes. I'd wash dishes and I'd come back. No. Mop the floor. I'd go mop the floor and I'd come back. He goes, no. You know, so it was like, you know, back and forth, you know, and teasing. I'd have a doll and he would throw it, you know, and laugh. And I thought it was okay. But I knew when I started growing up, I remember going into a house one time. I broke into this house. I must have been about 7, I think. And I would go back and forth, and I'd be ringing the doorbell and then run and ring the doorbell and run. And I said to myself, I want to go in that house. I don't know why. I already had that attitude of the sneakiness, the lying, the dishonesty. And I did this sober, too. And I said, how am I going to get in this house? Nobody's home. So I went around to the back. And it had the, you know, the screen, and I found a fork or something, and I started going like this, and I stuck my hand in there, and I opened the door, and I went through there, and I just looked. I was just curious, and I had a look. Of course, I got busted because I left my shoe there, and the cop was it was like 6 houses from our neighborhood, and he went over there, and he asked, and I got a good whooping. And my brothers were calling me stupid. And how could I do that? And I don't know, you know, I like the thrill of doing something and thinking I got away with it. You know, I like that. As I got older, my brother turned us on to how to drink tequila and the liquor they'd get from Mexico, the people would bring. And he'd pour it in the glass and we'd get shots, you know. And then he'd fill it back up with water so my parents wouldn't know. And my dad was mainly drinking beer. My mom didn't drink. So we would sit around drinking, and I liked it, you know, and they both worked, so we were latchkey kids, and I got to get in a lot of trouble that way. I remember having a neighbor, I was growing up, and back then, we used to flatline, you know, we used to bend over and breathe, and then somebody would be behind me, and then hold my heart right here, and I'd, you know, faint. Man, I like that shit. I like it, man. Let's do it again. You know, and sober. I didn't drink nothing or I didn't smoke nothing. You know, that was sober stuff. And I used to like it. And I'd run over there all the time and I want some more. I know you need to calm down right now, you know, but I like that. And I like that crowd. You know, if you told me no, I wanted to do it again. You know, and that's just my life. In the summer, my dad and my mom would go out there and pick grapes so we could have clothes for school when school started. And we had a two-bedroom house, and I slept with my mom in the room, and my brother slept with my dad until we got to a certain age, and then we moved out. But I always remember, too, feeling that embarrassment, you know, when my dad would take us to school or pick us up, and yeah, he didn't give a shit. I mean, he would embarrass us, and we'd get out of the car and be ducking, and he would do it right there in front of the playground, and you know, we had no shame. We had to learn easy, you know. And that was hard, though. You know, when I look back, growing up, and I played with boys because in my neighborhood was boys. I had my brothers, and I'd play flag football. I didn't play with dolls. I never got a Barbie. I always wanted a Barbie, but they were too expensive. You know, my mom couldn't afford to get me a Barbie. And I remember playing with the girl one time, and she wouldn't share her Barbie with me, and that hurt me, you know? And that hurt, you know? And I remember as I got older, about 10 years ago, one of my best friends bought me a Barbie in a bridal dress, and I started crying, you know? And that was really sweet. And as it progressed, I went through junior high, and I remember people drinking, and my eyes started opening more, and I'd see more drugs, and I saw a lot of my friends start going this way, and some started going this way, and I liked the ones going that way because, you know, that was the action, and all these kids going this way, they had a plan, and they had a journey, but I wasn't on that same journey they were. You know, I liked getting in trouble in school. I used to sit in the back and laugh and be the class clown or laugh with the class clown and writing notes, you know, to when I would ditch class. We'd ditch class and go to a friend's house and drink, you know, and come back. I had to go back because one of the teachers lived next door to my uncle, and if I didn't go, he would tell him. That was a stupid thinking in my head. And I remember my friend following me back, and she was drunk in class, and she got suspended, but nothing happened to me. And I used to write my notes, and the attendance lady lived on the same block we did, you know, and instead of, and I knew, she knew that wasn't my mom writing the notes, but you know, it's like I got, they let me slide by in school. You know, I felt, looking back now, I just slid by. And when I got to be a senior, I got out early in January because my mom says, you know, you need to get out because I'm not doing any good there. I wouldn't be going to school. I didn't feel like I fit in. And I always hung around with older people. I liked to go out with guys that were older than me, because they were 21 and they could buy beer. And the first guy I started dating in high school used to sell pot. So, hey, you know, wow, I had it made. And so I thought, you know, and that was the beginning of the turmoil and the insanity of my life. And as I kept getting older, the crowds that I would always choose, even at work, I always knew who to go to that had the drugs, that had the drinking. And my drug of choice was alcohol. I didn't get into drugs until later, into my later 20s, and that's what took me down. And I wasn't afraid of anything, you know. I went through a lot in my drinking days, and I remember it was fun, and I had fun, and you know, there was trouble, and then there was a lot of trouble, and there was no fun. And I remember back then, you know, I had my car and my friends would take it, you know, say, yeah, you know, go get it. And then back then, the police asked you for your ID. And if you didn't have it, we would give fake names, right, or other people's names. So one time I had a tag was expired, and they pulled me over and told me I had a bench warrant. I said, what? And it wasn't even me. The girl used my name. So they took me to jail, and I went to jail, and I had to appear in court. You know, when I was in jail, I'm like, oh my God. And they were looking at me, and it's not a good place to be. I didn't get beat up or anything. I was good. I didn't get punked. Nothing like that happened. So I was good. And I remember going and showing up to court, and you know, I gave her my name and I gave her my signature, and the date of birthday was wrong, so they let me go. So, but it didn't stop me there. And then I remember my daughter asked me, "How did you meet my son's father?" And I said, "At a liquor store." And her mouth goes, you know, like that. But I did. I met him at a liquor store. And what happened, and there in Fresno, there's a corner liquor store that everybody goes to, you know, and we buy our liquor. "Hey, what are you doing? Where's the party?" or whatever. And that's how it was called, Uncle Tom's. And I remember everybody came back to the house, and that's how we drank. And I would keep up with the guys because I didn't have any kids at that time. And a lot of the girls that I started drinking with started pulling back because they had families, and they didn't like to see where I was going because I started drinking and I'd have blackouts, you know. And then I started wearing pants because I knew I was falling off bar stools, and that's not good when you got a skirt on. And you know, and thank God they didn't have videos like they do now, you know. Thank God. Oh my God, I'd be all over the DJ and, you know, getting out of the bar all like this, and my friend pulling me, "Get your ass over here," because, you know, they want to throw me in a limo or something. I mean, you know, and I want to welcome the newcomers, you know, and my point is to hope that you can identify with part of my story. You know, if I can reach one, then I've done my job, you know. And I can tell you that the only thing that saved my ass was coming into AA. I remember going out there and writing bad checks, you know. Back then, I used to write checks, and I'd go to little markets where they wouldn't know me and had this face, I guess, a trusting face and balance. And I remember lending my car out because I didn't have money or whatever, and I would lend my car out, and my car would be missing for 2-3 days, you know, and so I would call the cops and report it stolen. And because if I figured if it wasn't going to rent my car out, my body was going to be next, you know. So it was my car. And, you know, when I started drinking and getting into other stuff later, I'd went to any lengths to get what I had to get to be drunk or to get high or do what I had to do. I went to any lengths, you know, and I went to some very dark places in my life. And I remember one time my dad picking me up at a gas station and taking me to the emergency room because I was so high from drinking and drugs and other drugs to get me down. And I remember in the emergency room, and he just started crying because he couldn't understand, you know. And that was the first time I saw this big man in my life, you know, bend over and feeling powerless that he couldn't help his daughter. And, you know, I felt like this, but that didn't stop me. You know, that didn't stop me. And every time when I eventually had my son, I found out I was pregnant, I was very upset. You know, I would sock my stomach because I didn't want to have this child because I knew I was going to be raising this baby by myself. And the man that I was involved with was very abusive. And and I knew it's because of the alcohol and everything else that, you know, I chose to be in that situation. I got myself in that predicament, and, you know, I was scared. And I remember my mother and my brothers coming and say, "It's going to be okay. We're going to be here for you. We're going to help you. You know, we're going to help you through this." And I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand. And so I called up, and I even remember cashing, not rain checks, what do you call those, money orders, and they were hot. And they called the cops, and boom, I ran out of there, and I went into the hospital, you know, trying to sneak away, and the cops were looking for me. And I remember, you know, I've been in a psych ward. I've been in 2 28-day programs. I threw myself into a 6-month county, you know, and I did 4 treatments. I was in and out of AA for 5 years, you know, because I couldn't get honest. Because I hadn't had enough, you know, I hadn't had enough. It still wasn't enough. And I remember when I went through that 28-day program, and they're giving you that survey. Did you do this? Did you do that? Did you sleep around? And how many? Did you? No, yes, no. And lying, you know? Lying. And I'm like, nah, I don't got a problem. You know what? I just got caught. I don't got a problem. You know, I'm not like you guys. I'm going to do it different. And It wasn't different, you know, and I'm looking back on my life, and I remember going to parties, and I couldn't even look at anybody, because if I did, I'd get smacked. Or if somebody would look at me or give me a beer, or I'd get smacked. You know, and I remember going home and hiding in the closet if he came home drunk, because I knew I was going to get it. You know, I knew that. I remember one time his cousin giving me a ride home, and he had to crawl through the window because I didn't have the keys, and he opened the door and let me stay, and he thought I, you know, something had happened, so I got smacked. And I stayed away from my family and my dad because I didn't want them to know what was going on in my life. I didn't want them to intervene in, because I thought I had it under control. And I was the type of alcoholic that I don't know how to stop at one. One isn't good. And when I did that, and in the book it talks about if you think that you can stop at one drink, you know, okay, but I'm not that one okay girl. You know, I'm not. I had to drink more. I have to drink to oblivion. I like to drink so that I can numb whatever's feeling, whatever I'm feeling, whatever. And I, you know, as I got older and I get more time under my belt, I used to blame my dad for a lot of stuff. And, you know, as I got wiser, you know, he did the best that he could with what he had and the tools that he had. He did the best that he could. You know, I wasn't a great mother. You know, I drank during my pregnancy. I would hide it, so I thought. I had a hard time in delivery, a very hard time. He came out fine, and after my son was born, I would cry. I would cry every time I seen him. I cried. My aunt would say, "Why are you crying?" And I couldn't tell her what I did. I said, "Because he's a miracle. You know, he's alive, and there's nothing wrong with him. You know, and for me, that was a miracle. But that didn't stop me. You know, I had that urge. I had that urge, and it was a drink before the drink. And I would just take one drink before when I was getting ready. I would have a drink, and that's it. It's on. You know." If I'm getting ready to go somewhere, I wouldn't want to eat because I could drink more and then I could get drunk quicker, so I thought. And I used to go to McDonald's, or they have those big straws, and pour my Bacardi in there because, yeah, I like those big straws because other stuff can go down real fast. And, I take my son with me a lot of times, and I'd be on benders, you know, and he's right there with me. And if I had to sell his diapers and the groceries that I had in the car to get what I needed to get, then so be it, I did it. And I remember one time he was on a big wheel and he fell down. And I was so loaded that and from drinking and everything that I couldn't even take him to the emergency room because I couldn't even drive, and he's got a cut right here. He doesn't know why. I just said, "Well, yeah, you did fall off a three-wheeler or a six-wheeler, but I couldn't even take him to get a stitch, whatever he needed to. And I remember going to the doctor and telling him that I needed to do a rehab, and he wouldn't release me because he didn't believe in alcoholism, you know, my primary care doctor, and that was hard. You know, when I'm thinking back, it was so hard. And so I finally went back out again, and I went to emergency room and had them release me through the emergency center. And when I was coming home one day, I pulled over and I told my parents I'm on my way. And every time I would call and they would give me my son to talk to me or tell me, "Where are you?" You know, blah, blah, blah. I'd hang up and that guilt would eat me alive. And I'd go, "F it, I'm not going back. I'm going back out." So I'd go back out for another 2 or 3 days. You know, I don't want to hear that crap. And it was the guilt. The guilt that, man, I'm not a good mom. I'm not a good mom. When my son was born, I didn't even know how to give him a bath. I had to hang up a big old sheet of paper, you know, that comes when you at the hospital. And I had to tape it. And I had to read the directions because I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to be a mother. They sent me to parenting classes. And I thought, well, I don't need this. I got this. But, you know, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was going to a parenting class, because it taught me a lot about how I was raised, and it created in me to have new tools to teach myself and my son. And that helped me. And I was coming home, and my brother called the sheriff on me. So when I came home, the sheriff was there waiting for me, and they took me in. And they called CPS, and he told me, he goes, I don't give a shit if you're going to drink, and if you want to kill yourself, then go right ahead, but you're not taking my nephew with you. He goes, you're not going to like me, but maybe one day you're going to understand. And, you know, and it's been 25 years, and we can barely talk, you know. We can talk, but it's just not the same, because to this day, he still thinks that I still have one more out there, you know. And it's not for me to... I just got to lead by example. And I remember coming into the programs, and I was scared. I was scared. I was afraid of getting to know who Cindy was. But I'll tell you what, on that last drunk that I had, I knew that I didn't want to live like that anymore. You know, I didn't want to live like that no more. I knew that there had to be something more to what I was doing. Because I knew that, you know... I knew of a God, but the God I grew up in, I didn't understand because everything was Latin. And, you know, I'd get pinched if I didn't behave, and I'd be drunk on a Saturday night. And my mom says, if you can go and drink, you know, go out, you can go to church, you show up on Sunday. So I would show up on Sunday with a big, massive headache. And the God I knew was a condemning God. And it's not until that I came into AA and they said, a God of your understanding. And I like that chapter of the agnostics. You know, I believed in God, but I had no knowledge. You know, and once I had that knowledge, everything changed. And, you know, when I came in, they told me I had to, you know, that I had to admit that I was powerless. You know, so going in and out. I finally did admit that I was powerless. You know, I was powerless over my drinking, my life, everything, all the choices that I've made in my life have always led to the bottom of the pit. And how much further can I go? You know, it's like you get a shovel and you're digging. You know, and I, you can't see the bottom because it's, you know, real low, but I had to keep digging. I had to keep trying. You know, I had to keep trying. I'm one of those alcoholics that I had to keep digging. I couldn't put the shovel down and just, you know, bury all that crap and work through it. I don't know. That's me. And today God uses me to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. Amen. You know, and I came in afraid, but I knew that there had to be a better life again, like I said. And there is today, I'm telling you, if you're struggling. And if you don't know that you need to be here, you know, check it out. And then when I came in too, they said, don't make any serious changes in a year. But do you see, you don't know me. You know, my dad at a certain age, he started pushing me back. You know, so I wasn't getting that male attention that I needed. I didn't get to sit on his lap anymore. I didn't get to those hugs and him holding my hand and taking me to school. I didn't get that no more. So I started seeking that in relationships, you know, and so I came into AA and they said, don't make any changes, Cindy. So, but see, that guy over there is cute. I want to fix him, you know, right? You know, just for one night, you know, I'll fix him. But, you know, I changed. I don't do that anymore. They told me not to do that. So when a man would come up and say, oh, you look good. You smell good or you look nice. And right away, he wants to marry me. You know what I mean? He wants a relationship with me. Don't tell me that. Just tell me good job. Good job. That's all. Just tell me good job. That's all I want to hear. Because I couldn't hear anything else because I couldn't take it because I'd eat it up. You know, and because, see, I wanted that attention, and I didn't get it from my dad, and I didn't get it from my brothers. We fought. You know, we fought. If it was passing the salt or anything, we yelled. And, you know, I'm very loud. And when people get going, and I don't have that relationship with him today. It's different. You know, it's a lot of love. He's calling me 2-3 times a day. When he coming over? And when I go over, he's telling me, please don't leave. You know, so it's changed, and... I love Alcoholics Anonymous and what it's done to me in my life. I remember going to learning how to dance in sobriety. That was really hard because that was really hard. So I go to the NA dances because they can't sit still. to conferences or I have a date, you know, somebody'd ask me out, and I'd start pacing all the way from like that because I didn't know how to go and be on a date and be a lady without drinking. Right. You know what I mean? I didn't know how to keep my hands to myself and my pants on. You know what I mean? I didn't know how. You know, and one time Victor says, I was going through something, he goes, well, put your big panties on. And I remember I said, well, the big panties fall down. You know what I mean? You need those small ones to hold all that crap in, right? And, you know, that's how I think right away. And I'm quick with words, and I'm quick with my hands, and quick with everything else. And when I came in, I had to take direction. And I don't like to take direction. Don't tell me what to do. I don't like to be controlled. I hate it because I was controlled with my father and everybody else, you know. It's not, can you pass this? Get me that. Bring me that. Do that. And I can't stand it. I'm getting better now. But it's just something that eats inside me. And today I had a bad day at work and some stuff happened and this girl kept mouthing off, and I asked her to please be quiet and to zip her mouth, and I could feel all that anger coming up in me, and I started shaking, and my hand was shaking, you know, and I said, God be with me, God, you know, and I'm constantly thinking of others, you know, please help me, I don't want to say anything that I'm going to regret, help me, and she kept on, and I was a mess, so I left work, and I came to a meeting, you know, that's what I do today. I came to a meeting, I shared about it, I wrote about it, and I grabbed Lisa and I talked about it. And then I went to church, and here I am. Amen. You know? I'm just telling you that, God, there's so much that it's, you know, everything's going around in here, and, you know, the newcomers, this is so important that we connect, you know, and that you don't be afraid and don't feel ashamed. And when I started working the steps, what changed me? Well, let me back up. I remember I was living in a house and the neighbor came over knocking on the door and he asked me to help his mom because his mom fell and she was in the bathtub. And I said, no, I couldn't go over there and help. You know, because I was drinking and you're bothering my drinking time. Because she needs help. And I didn't go. You know, that was me. I didn't give a shit. You know, and my attitude back there, I hang with people that didn't care. I hang with people that beat up either people. I hang with people that would roll people for, you know, money and stuff. Driving around and learning to drink, you know, on a Sunday or whatever day. You know, people wake up on Saturday mornings. I never went to bed. You know? I'm still up, and that's not a way to live, you know, it's not a way to live. I had to have more to life than to what life was offering me, and then I came into the program, and I started working my steps, and I got a good trusted friend, sponsor, and I let everything out, and I remember meeting with the priest, too, you know, and I was supposed to meet him at a certain time, and I started driving, and that thought, you know, Just one more, Cindy, for the, you know, old time's sake. And I was gone. And he waited for me. And I called him and I told him what happened. So I went back and I made an appointment and I did my confession one-on-one, you know, just like this. I want him to see me because I want to see your reactions. I want to see your face if it starts crinkling up or, you know, your body motions. Because once you start doing that, I'm out because now you think that I'm the bottom of the bottom. I'm out. And it wasn't like that. It was love. And he showed me, and AA has showed me to find a God in my understanding. And when I started working the steps, and I did my fourth, and I wrote everything that I needed to write about, and I got in that fifth step, and I shared. And by that time I shared, I wasn't even afraid anymore. Because where I had been and places and situations, I am a miracle that I am here. I've rolled cars. I've been in places where there's guns, and guns pointed to my head. You won't leave me if you do that. You know, it's not a good place. Today I don't have to do that. I found a God in my understanding. He takes care of me. He watches my back. And I remember meeting my husband's in the program. And I remember meeting him, and I was like 11 months, almost a year, so I was good. And I went up to him and asked him for his phone number, you know, because that's what we did back then. We asked people for their phone numbers. We didn't have a phone list, and I wasn't afraid. You know, I grew up with boys, so I could, you know, can I get your number? You know, so he gave me his number, and then I called him. I said, I'm going to have a barbecue. You want to come over? He goes, who's going to be there? Just you and me. I wanted to get to know him. You have too many people, and it, you know, he's not going to be paying attention to me. You know what I mean? And I guess he got scared because he didn't come. So when we met, Bob and I met, and, you know, I put Bob through the ringer because then when I would almost get a year of sobriety, I couldn't handle it because people would start clapping and I couldn't handle the praise and the good and all that. And I would cry and they said, don't do that. You know, I'm not there yet. I'm not at that year yet. Don't. And I'd go back out, you know, because I'd go back out too if it started feeling too good. Because I don't know how to feel. I don't know. I didn't know how to feel when I feel real good, how to handle those good feelings and where to put them and what to do with them. I didn't know, and so we got together, and we started dating, and we learned to be friends before we even got intimate, you know. We learned to be friends, and that was something that we both decided that we needed to do, because before, it's always lust that takes in, and then the lust wears out, and what do you got, you know? When are you leaving, you know? Time to move, you know, and we formed a friendship, and that was beautiful. And I remember dating him, and he was nice to me, and he was a good guy, you know, and he treated me good, and he opened the door for me, and I didn't know how to handle that. I didn't know how to handle that, and I would sabotage our relationship, and I'm like, you don't know me. You don't know where I've been. You don't know what I've done. He kept coming back, and he'd be writing me letters and nice cards, and I'd start crying because I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know how to handle it. You know, I really didn't know how to handle it. My dad didn't do that to my mom. He didn't buy her flowers. You know, this guy I was dating never did that to me. You know, and this guy started doing all this, and I was overwhelmed. I was very overwhelmed. And he got to see the side then when I would go back out, and he'd be looking for me and couldn't find me. You can't find me when I'm gone. When I'm gone, I'm gone. You're not going to know where to go. You know, and I'll be in places and that you wouldn't even think to go look. And I remember my friend, they went to a meeting and they says, hey, your friend Cindy's over there in that house. And she went over there with her husband and she pulled me out of that house. And she says, do you remember me pulling you out? And I says, no, I don't remember. And I'd relapse and the women would go pick me up from my dad's house and take me back to the Alano Club. And I always wanted to say, well, my pride's going to keep me, you know, away. I'm going to go to the other side of the town. I'm going to get my 30 days, and I'm going to come back, and nobody's going to know. You know, but I knew. You know, I knew. And I would come back, and I'd be floored on my butt and hanging on the table like this. And they were telling me, you can do it, you can do it. And no one ever told me in my family that you could do it. You know, I was always compared to my other two cousins that were doing it. And I hated them for that, you know, and I never felt that I could do it, you know, but I have today. I've done the steps and I do it, and I've 25 years of sobriety. Yeah. But, you know, it's a lot of hard work, and it's not just one day at a time for me. Sometimes it's a minute, yeah. And it's a lot of work, and if you're willing to do the work, to get with somebody, attend meetings, get into service right away, stay in service, stay connected. You know, there's a chance. And you know, sometimes I get real passionate about it and I want to slap the shit out of some of you women because... because we came in, I know I came in and I'm on a pity pod. You know, a pity party, PMS, poor me syndrome. And I want everybody to be sorry for me, you know, feel sorry for me. But I'm a good manipulator. I'm a good bullshitter. I'm a good liar. I'm a conniver. Everything that's the opposite of good, that's what I was. You know what I mean? And I learned that. And I had to relearn everything. And I surrendered. I want a better way of life. teach me. What do I need to do? Cindy, you need to start sharing more. You need to get in service. You need to start doing those ashtrays. You need to start working. You need to start giving girls rides. And I did, and I do. You know, and it's amazing how many times you give your phone number out, nobody gives, you know, to, you know, calls you back. And the ones that do are the ones that want it. And the program is for anybody that wants it. You know, the only desire is, you know, to not want to drink. You know, there's no membership dues or fees. We're all welcome here. You know, there's a lot of love. But, you know, we also got to be very careful, too, because there's a lot of sick people in here. You know, I'm telling you, there's a lot of sick people. Shit, they want to get in your pants and do everything that. You know, we got to change when we come in here. You know, our perception, everything has to change. I come in and today I care. When I came in, I didn't give a shit about anybody. I didn't care. And today I do. You know, I see somebody struggling. I'll open the door for them. An elderly person, I'll help them to their car, whatever. And, you know, now I don't even think about it. It just comes natural. It just comes natural. If somebody can't afford something, you know, gas, I'm there. I'll just, but, you know, I don't need a pat on the back either. I do it because, you know, I have God in my life today. And, you know, God's doing for me what I can do for myself. You know, I'm up here hoping that maybe somebody can identify with me. You know, that drink and that next high or whatever you're going to get. You know, you came in through these rooms for a reason. You're at a sobriety house or a halfway house for a reason. You're not there because your life is good and because you could drink one drink and life's merry. No, it ain't going to work. You got a court card because you did something wrong. You disobeyed the law. You know, you're drinking, you know, and I don't come in here and co-sign nobody's bullshit, you know, because that's not the way it works. For me, this is life and death. My brother just died August. It's going to be a year. And he died to this disease. And I couldn't help him understand. He had like 10 years. He quit going to meetings. He quit sharing. He didn't have a sponsor. He got out of service, you know, and I wanted to beat the shit out of his head too, but I couldn't. You know, and I can't help everybody, but the person that I can reach and I can help, I'm here. You know, I'm here. And I know that if I could stand up here and do it, I know that you can do it too. But you got to hang with the right people. And I had to stop the music I was listening to. I had to stop hanging with those so-called friends. I had to back up from some of my family members because they're sick. They're sick and they'll put me down and they don't let me forget where I came from. I'll be driving and my dad said, "Remember when you did this?" Well, how in the hell can I forget every time I'm in the truck with you and you're telling me? You know what I mean? And today we could talk and you know, my brother, he's 60 years old. He's having a tantrum the other day because something happened. And I'm like, wow, that was me. And my dad goes, "Oh, my God, what the hell's the matter with him?" I says, "Dad, we learned that from you." Yeah. And my dad looked at me and I said, "We learned the tools from you, Dad. You know, that's what you used to do. You didn't know how to handle your anger and everything, so you exploded on everybody." I said, "Today, though, I have tools. I know how to do it. And I'm the example for my family." And when I was in all those treatment centers, in order for my dad to see me, he had to attend it, too. So he attended Al-Anon groups, and we'd sit in a big old circle. And they put him there and me. Oh, shit. You know, it was on. Yeah, I want to know this and who are you with this. And he didn't give a shit who was listening or who was around and what I do. I want to get up and run. Because all the attention's on me, even though I like that attention, but now it's all on me. And my dad wants answers. Should I even barely, not in number two yet. And he will, you know, I need to make amends. He wants me to make amends. "You take that money from me?" I said, "Yeah." You know, "I knew it. See, Tilly, I knew it. I knew it when she went out with that guy. It's all your fault." You know, and but today it's not like that. You know, I have a good relationship with my father. I love my father. You know, and he was my big supporter. He's my big rock. He was always telling me that when I was in treatment, don't give up. He's always writing me letters. You know, "I love you, mija, I love you. You can do this," you know, and we did it together. And my mom came in, and my grandma used to go and visit me. And it took a long time for my brothers to come around because the younger one couldn't understand. He just couldn't understand, and I couldn't help him understand because we think different. You know, he was always there helping the person that needed help. And, you know, I wasn't. I was always belittling and making fun of people and laughing at people. And no, I don't laugh at them. I laugh with you. You know what I mean? I don't cry. Today I cry with you. You know, I had a sponsee do a four step with me and a fifth. And, you know, we both were kneeling and crying because today I felt her pain. I felt what she was going through. Even though I hadn't experienced it, I was experiencing it with her at that moment. And what a beautiful thing that is, huh? What a beautiful thing is when you come in and you can get with another woman and have that bond and not feel afraid and feel safe, you know, to feel safe and loved, that I'm not going to be taken advantage of, you know? What a feeling. I never had that feeling. I didn't have that feeling when I was out there drinking. You know, I was used and abused. But when I came in into the rooms, I wasn't. Yeah, sure, some of them are going to, you know, but it is what it is, you know, and we're all here hopefully for the same reason, to stay sober. We all have a different story, but you know what? The bottom, the thing we have in common is the drink that and the disease. It's that disease, and it's cunning, and it's baffling, and it's waiting. You know, it's waiting. And when I stop going to a meeting and I start sharing, and I could be meditating and a thought will come in my house, kick her butt or go slap her, what the hell, you know? And I'm meditating and I'm like, why is this thought coming in my head? Man, I'm, you know, possessed or something. But, you know, I learned to let the thought go, because before I would stay on that thought and concentrate, where's this coming from? I got to figure it out. And now I just let it go. You know, to something else, to good. And right away, I'm on the phone. And this morning, I was calling, and I couldn't. Finally, somebody picked up. And I don't use the excuse, well, I tried calling. No, I tried calling and calling and calling till somebody picks up. That's what I do. Because, you know, I'd be there at the liquor store at opened at 6. I was there at 5. If I was waiting for a bag to be dropped, I'd be waiting 5 hours, sweating and peeking out the window because I was wanting to get high. I don't do that anymore. I come early and show up to a meeting. You know, I help and I fellowship before and I do it after. You know, and if you're struggling, you know what, share and tell somebody that you need help. You know, we're all here for each other. We all have people that love us and... You know, and all the family stuff, you know, some of it will come back and maybe some of it won't. But, you know, that's okay. But as long as I'm here and I'm in a good marriage, my kids are healthy. I share with them today. We can talk about anything. My son can come and tell me about his relationships and what's going on with them. My daughter, too, she's a normie and will tell me, why do I keep going back and beating myself up and sabotaging me over friendships sometimes. And I said, because I guess I never had enough and never, I want to hold on. And sometimes breaking up a friendship that's not good for me hurts too. I have to grieve over that because I tried my best. But today in recovery and, you know, in that triangle, you see the unity, the service, and the recovery. That's what it's all about. And I hang with people that are going to feed me. They're going to feed me spiritually. You know, they're going to feed me when I'm walking in a room and they're going to pat me or just give me a smile, you know, and it's going to be okay. This too shall pass. And when they say this too shall pass, sometimes that too shall is taking too long. You know what I mean? Because I want it to pass like that, man. Let's pass it. You know, and I got to sit in it sometimes and I got to feel the pain. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, before, I don't know about you, but I'd get all choked up right here. And I'd be going like that because I didn't want to cry. Because, you know, I don't want to be a crybaby. And, you know, and just to feel things today is awesome. To feel that when I'm sad or somebody hurt me, it's okay to cry. You know, it's okay to cry that I'm extremely happy and that feeling that I have when God touches my soul and when I'm helping somebody. I can't explain it, but it's just a feeling of peace and tranquility that surpasses all, you know, and I can't get that when I'm drinking, but I sure in the hell got it here, and I get it when I'm helping another alcoholic trying to achieve one more day without a drink, you know. So wherever you come from, you know, whatever bottom you've hit and whatever, you know, we're here. We're all here for the same denominator, you know, grasp one of us, get that spiritual connection, whatever you want, mine's God, and you'll get through this, you know, and start, you know, I used to have post-it notes all over the mirror because I couldn't look in the mirror. I couldn't comb my hair and look in the mirror. I didn't want to see what was on that side of the mirror. Today I can do that. I'd go to the refrigerator and it says, you could do it, Cindy, you can, you're worth it, I love you. You know, I had to tell myself, I love you. And then I used to start saying, Jesus loves you. You know, and I can do that freely today because I love myself too much today to put myself in a situation where it's not healthy for me. Thank you for letting me share.
Let's give Cindy another round.